I recognize that it's an extremely rare first of its kind discovery, but doesn't that seem so weird? Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. Or worlds. This week, we talk about TRAPPIST-1 and a series of Earth-like planets. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next.
Hey, a whole gaggle of them.
Yeah, it's like a bunch. It's like Snow White and the Seven Planets.
Yeah, yeah. Snow White Dwarf and... Oh, never mind. It's not a white dwarf, so that doesn't really work, but...
That would have been something.
It was a good try.
Yes. So, I think we can get straight into it. I don't see any housekeeping or anything like that.
Cool. Yeah, I don't think I have anything.
Excellent. Let's go for it. You want to lead us in on the big news story?
Yeah, NASA found a bunch of rocky Earth-sized planets around the TRAPPIST-1 system, and all seven of them may contain liquid water, and three of them are in the habitable zone. So there's the potential for life.
There's so many things that are crazy about this.
Yeah.
I don't have the space gene. You have the space gene.
I'm sad for you. Yeah, I have it very much.
So I would be perfectly content if, you know, Hollywood was the extent of my space experience for the rest of my life. I don't know. I don't care. I don't know why.
Yeah, I would go tomorrow if I could.
Yeah. So to somebody like me, what's the excitement? Like, what would be, like, what do you wish you could do tomorrow?
Wow. What I wish I could do tomorrow, framing it in terms of reality, I would be perfectly happy with just, you know, hanging out in low Earth orbit for a while.
But okay. That seems doable.
Yeah. Yeah. If you had enough money.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah, if we're going to go full sci-fi, I would love to plant my feet on another planet. And if that planet had liquid water and alien life, that would be even cooler.
Yeah, just, I don't even like going to the beach.
Yeah, well, I don't either. The sand gets everywhere.
What do you think's going to happen on the moon? Or like
some planet? I'm going to be in a spacesuit.
It's, the whole thing sounds so uncomfortable to me. I don't know. I'd be fine on the beach if I had a spacesuit on. So maybe that's my problem. Maybe I just need to get more familiar with spacesuits.
Maybe. You just need more spacesuits. NASA has a new one of those, too. So.
Oh, really? Well, as you can see, they're getting ready.
Yeah, I think it's JPL. They're developing a replacement for the orange flight suit. Mm. Not the big EVA suit.
Mm.
But it's much more form-fitting and flexible and comfortable and that sort of thing.
A lot more Star Wars.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about tech, because that's what we're here to talk about.
Okay.
So a couple of things, and perhaps this is going to be speculation, and because I know neither one of us is like an expert on some of these specifics, or really any of them, because it's all new information mostly. But what, first of all, how do they see the freaking thing? Like how, like the star in the first place? TRAPPIST-1 is the star, I guess.
Big telescope.
Okay. In space, or...
I believe it's actually Earth-based. There is a telescope launching next year that's going to orbit a million miles above Earth that will let them get a much better picture of it and other solar bodies. It's not launching specifically for this. That would be a weird, huge waste of resources.
So, and then the Spitzer, what was Spitzer? That was in the story. Is that another that's the telescope that's trailing the Earth?
I believe so.
Okay, so you know what? Actually, I remember now. TRAPPIST is the name of the telescope that found the star in the first place.
Yes, yes.
And it's in Scotland or something.
Yeah, I've read so many articles on it. They all kind of mix together. And I was so much in my, oh my God, this is so cool phase that details have kind of been washed away now.
Right.
I had to go back and actually pay attention.
Okay, cool. So it's something like, more or less, that there's a telescope on the ground that discovered the star itself. And then there's this Spitzer infrared telescope that trails the, it's like in space behind the Earth.
Yes.
And apparently it's well suited for studying TRAPPIST because the star, it's a ultra cool dwarf, kind of like Game of Thrones.
Right. Yes, exactly. This dwarf is very cool.
Mm.
Yeah, I had a D&D character like that once, but
I was more of a ranger guy. But anyway. So okay, so One of the cool details that I think we should bring up, even though it's irrelevant, is that the planet, the star is so cool that the habitable zone for human-type people and Earth-like planets is very close to the star itself. It's much closer. It's closer, I guess, than Mercury is to our sun, because our sun's much hotter.
Yes, and one of the articles I read said that if you were standing on one of those planets in the habitable zone, you would get a lot less sunlight than you get standing on Earth, but you'd have just as much like radiant heat energy.
Right, so like less intense, but more mellow. It's like ultra cool is the right word for it.
Yeah, it is.
Think of what this could be the new Bahamas.
I just started to say, if it's a lot darker, like this is the planet you go to and chill out when you have a migraine.
Sounds convenient. So the other thing about this is that the planets are quite close together, which means you can see them like in the sky the way that we see the moon. So they're like really close. You'd be like planets zooming all over the place. And the cycles around the sun are fast. One of the people said they were fast. So presumably that would mean faster than 365.
Yeah, more like I believe it was either 13, something like that, days. Yeah, those planets are booking it.
What are the odds of them? I guess if they were going to smash into each other, that would have happened already. I'm not a space guy. And I recognize by the reaction that all these astronauts are having, like they're like giddy. Mm-hmm. They're like giggling. And I recognize that it's an extremely rare first of its kind discovery. But doesn't that seem so weird? Like when you look at anything they talk about, there's like billions of galaxies. Mm-hmm. It's so weird to me that it's that rare for some random number of rocks to be circling a star in a given area.
Yeah, it does seem, I get what you're saying, and like I said, there's billions of galaxies. It does seem that it's kind of weird that potentially habitable planets are that rare, and I'm not so sure they are that rare. Maybe it's just that we don't have a lot of them close enough to, you know, in our galactic neighborhood, so to speak. And so maybe we just haven't had the technology to really like verifiably detect them.
Yeah, I suppose. It's kind of like, let's search our yard for a Rolex.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of Rolexes out there. They're just not in our yard.
Not in your yard. Yeah.
Literally my best analogy ever. Okay. So what does it change that we know that these, like now is Elon Musk going to call off the Mars thing and we're going to go to these TRAPPIST exoplanets?
Well, it's 40 light years away, which with current and any sort of realistic near future technology would take us millions and millions of years to get there. So chances are, you know, if he wants to continue turning a profit on his many businesses, shipping them off to like TRAPPIST F, which I believe they think is the most likely to have life and liquid water, doesn't sound like a prudent business decision.
No.
But I guess all the excitement here is more just people geeking out about science than what we could practically do with it. Because it's just, we've never, it's a chance to sort of confirm if we're able to find anything that life exists outside of our solar system.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like that's the bigger deal. Yeah, that's the bigger deal. It's almost a religious thing.
Yeah, well, almost, yeah. But there's potentially some useful to us discoveries that could come out of that, I suppose.
Sure.
I'd have a hard time naming them off the top of my head, but I can see how being able to study how life exists in these other environments could help us in adapting and dealing with things in our own.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can definitely see that. So, but what's the move? Like you send a Mars rover to TRAPPIST F and VR headset your way into it?
I think you get really bigger and more powerful telescopes and point at it for a while.
Hmm.
And do your spectral analyses and that sort of thing to sort of determine the composition of the planets and their atmospheres. And you can actually, I was reading about this a while back, and you can actually get a pretty detailed account of what a solar body, or I guess not solar because it's not in our solar system, celestial body, there we go, is comprised of just by analyzing the light and radiation that you're receiving from it and just doing a spectral analysis on that. So I guess that's the next step.
That was kind of going to be my next question for you. I don't know if you know the answer, but like obviously this is not a regular telescope. And if it's 40 light years away, that means that if you put your eye on the little eyepiece, it would take 80 years before you saw anything or you're looking at light from 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's not light they're looking at. It must, well, or is it? Or is radiation? Well,
I guess some of it's going to be visible light, I'm sure. But a lot of it's going to be radiation, I guess. Yeah.
Mm. It seems so easy to fake.
Yeah, it's hard to get your head around that. I mean, on the one hand, it's like, are we looking out there and seeing this rocky planet, or are we getting this information back that tells us there's this rocky planet there?
Right.
They're subtle but very important differences.
Yes. And, you know, I watched a video of grown adults giddy with excitement. So they clearly believe that they've got data that proves that stuff is here. But of course, like, to make this make sense to non-space people like me, they've already got artist renderings of, here's the photo we got of all the planets lined up. And I almost feel like, you know, they're probably looking at a track-fed printout
of a bunch of numbers. Yeah, maybe some nice pretty lined graphs.
Yeah. So, you know, and they're getting like, they're giddy with excitement over like, yeah, you know, a parabola that shouldn't be there. So, okay. So what is that? So what is it? I mean, 40 light years. That is, I mean, it's inconceivable to imagine that. I mean, is it? It's inconceivable to imagine, unless Elon Musk figures out how to fold space time, which I wouldn't put past him.
Right. If he gets us close to light speed transportation.
Mm, yeah.
Where you could go there in, say, maybe 60 years.
Yes. It's so weird. Yeah. I mean, you get to like the interstellar plot line where you like cryogenically freeze people.
Yeah. It turns sci-fi.
Right. But I mean, is that, I swear, because it's impossible. It's impossible, right? Like you can't, I mean, it's not technically possible now, but that's not possible.
Right. I don't think cryogenically physically freezing people is possible.
Yeah, because, physics-wise.
Yeah, you're going to do too much cell damage.
You can't even freeze a strawberry.
Without destroying it,
So
yeah.
Suspended animation of some kind. Well, I don't know. I mean, there's at least one guy who looks like Rasputin, you know, who believes that he can stop the aging process. It's like, right. He's like, there's nothing inherent about the human body that forces it to die. It's just wear and tear.
Just wear and tear, and it does, yeah.
Disease, but like trees don't have a lifespan. So why do humans?
I think if you wanted to actually go to an interstellar place, your best bet would be artificial intelligence.
Yeah, right. Which gets back to the immortality thing. It's like, do you... So it's a good segue, actually. we might as well go there.
We might as well, just, yeah.
No spoilers, that's all. So, okay. So let's say you wanted to transport your consciousness. The most feasible way with current terrestrial technology, it seems pretty clear that it almost would be like a Kurzweil-like singularity where we upload our consciousness into silicon or something else. But into hardware that's not biological.
Mm-hmm.
It seems the most feasible, like that. Like as crazy as that sounds, it seems the most, it's more feasible than freezing your silly body.
Right.
You need that for. But so then what? Like, why even go there? Like, who cares what's habitable? You know what I mean? We could go anywhere. We could go on the moon and live there too. Right. It wouldn't, like, what difference does it even make?
I mean, especially if you're talking about sending an artificial intelligence and not a physical human being, then in terms of our survivability, it doesn't matter if anybody else is quote unquote habitable or not. But you know, I'm a big fan of science for science's sake, and finding out all we can about this stuff.
It would seem like a mistake to not pursue it.
Right.
And I could see, I'm really big on the idea. I think it would be game changing. Of course, it would be game changing if we found a whole. We had some sort of proof of an information, but like useful information about entire different classes of organism and perhaps even elements, you know, like an element that exists elsewhere that we just didn't land here.
Or even if we find biologically very similar organisms, that says a lot too, because it sort of solidifies the theory that life develops similarly, is going to develop similarly under similar atmospheric circumstances.
Mm, yeah.
You know, there's a theory there that what life on Earth has developed into and evolved into over the years, naturally we became those things because that was the most efficient and the best and the most prudent evolutionarily. So the theory is that other life on other planets similar to Earth are going to evolve along a similar path.
Mm, yeah. Wow. That is pretty interesting. There's, I mean, not to go down a rabbit hole on that, but it seems to me that there'd be enough even subtle differences to have massive forks in the evolution, like massive.
Right. I mean, the difference between us and a gorilla is like less than 1% genetically.
Right. Like what if, yeah, I mean, like it's easy to imagine a cockroach planet or like just complete, yeah, it's easy to imagine like just because of the different nature of, I mean, even one of these planets, like you can see other planets from this planet,
mm-hmm.
which would, I feel like, dramatically change, let's just say, prehistoric humans evolved on that planet, something prehistorically human-like. It would totally change the way that they perceived all of the kind of the whole early barbaric era stuff.
Right. This us as the center of the universe idea, I don't think would be as prevalent because you could look and see, oh, hey, there's another planet just like ours. And, you know, maybe you can't see people walking around on it. But if you can see, you know, maybe there's greenery and oceans and that sort of thing, then, yeah, you're not going to go, you know, we're all alone in the universe. We must be the most important thing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like, even if you just imagine civilization, the evolution of, it's probably the wrong word, but the development of civilization, it would go mm-hmm. in a very different way. If you think, it would have to, because if you think how much of prehistoric human, not prehistoric, but ancient human civilizations were super focused on the sky, like celestial events, celestial bodies. Yeah.
How many sun gods are there out there?
Right. And like all of those shenanigans that came along with it. So then if you imagine, I mean, like the whole way that you would want to go there so bad, like if you could mm-hmm. see a planet across from you with clouds and stuff.
Yeah.
You'd be like,
you'd want to go.
You want to go so bad. Even I would.
Right. You wouldn't. Yeah. Even you would. You wouldn't stop. You wouldn't stop after going to other planets after Apollo 15.
No, I feel like you'd just assume that there was life there too.
You probably would. And, you know, especially if the planet physically looks similar and it's got blue oceans and green grass or, you know, who knows, maybe orange oceans and purple grass, but whatever.
That would be cool. Like Minecraft.
Yeah.
Minecraft texture pack.
Universal texture pack. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think if it had a similar appearance, even if you couldn't prove that there was life on it, you would just probably just assume that there was.
Yeah, why wouldn't there be? I feel like it'd be a natural assumption. But you look at the moon and you're like, there's probably nothing there.
No, there's nothing there.
It's barren. It's like a, you know, I mean, it's obviously a giant egg. It's clearly a giant egg with a dragon
right, yeah.
inside of it.
A giant egg with a dragon inside. Getting all the sci-fi.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. Like, I feel like this... on Earth, the technology that allows it to detect these things
mm-hmm.
affects what? So we've got this technology. It allowed us to detect this thing. What? Let's say that we are like, wow, we are confident. We have reason to believe that, yes, there are Minox or something on TRAPPIST F, or that there's a orangutan. Basically, there's Pokemon on TRAPPIST F. There's a Charmander. We've detected a Charmander. What do you think would happen here? Like, what's the not debate, but there would be a debate.
There would be a debate.
There'd be a big God debate, I'm sure.
Yeah, it'd put a lot of people's religious views into question.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, maybe a good thing, maybe a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it would definitely change that.
But ruling that out, and like scientifically, for people that are like, okay, I believe this information, I believe in science, I believe that this is true mm-hmm. or verifiable. What could happen? Do you think is there a medical advance from this? Is there, you know, plan like Elon Musk's plan B from this? I don't. Is there too far away for that? Does it redouble our efforts to find other ones closer?
You know, it's really so far away that it's hard to speculate what sort of practical things other than raw scientific data that we might gain out of it. You know, in terms of practical things in our everyday life that we would get from knowing that there's life on another planet outside our solar system. I guess for some people, which would be terrifying, for others, it would be very, very reassuring. Right. I do think it would sort of rekindle an interest in space exploration and sort of cause us to maybe redouble our efforts to continue to move outwards within our own solar system. And, you know, all of these sci-fi talks of interstellar travel and faster than light and transport and or near light speed transportation, all that stuff. It's all great, but we're still bound by the laws of physics. Yeah, I think we can certainly get to a point where space travel is much faster than it is now, but it's never going to get to the point where, you know, hopping off to a solar system 40 million light years away is going to be reasonable. But, you know, it might get to a point where going to closer systems like Alpha Centauri or something is.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think it sort of incentivizes the need to keep exploring and keep expanding, I guess.
Mm. Oh, I absolutely believe that it would be very encouraging in that regard. It's like it's a huge win for science. Like, if you just look at the sciences, okay, that's clearly a huge win, but that's a small that's a small group of the population. Like, I literally know only one scientist of the thousands of people I know.
I have a friend who works at NASA. Yeah. But yeah.
It's not a huge population of people. Right. So, okay, they're excited. I mean, going from zero to one is pretty big. When you're like, okay, there are zero planets other than ours that we have detected life on, or at least what we would consider life. You go to one other one, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, that's going to change something. Because right away you're going to have a debate about it, whether or not they should be contacted.
Yeah.
That would be a giant public debate.
And I mean, it depends on the level of development of the life that's on that planet and if they've even evolved in a way that we're able to communicate with. But yeah, that would be a giant debate. And
I didn't even mean communicate. I meant like first contact, like we disturb them in any way, like Star Trek style.
Right.
Like do we therefore decide not to send a probe to the planet? Imagine if a probe landed on Earth, like clearly alien technology. It would be if it happened now, people would freak.
Mm-hmm.
But even if there wasn't, anything to recognize that, how crazy it was, you know, like it's just a bunch of like protozoa floating around.
Monkeys. Yeah.
Or yeah, even right.
Like you're a monkey and this giant black monolith descends.
Well done. Very well done. Right. Like you have to have the Star Trek conversation.
Yeah.
How are we sure that we're not going to introduce a flu virus and destroy what the delicate balance of life on Trappist F?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's
how do we know we're not doing it, but with like measuring the radio waves, you know, I suppose we're receiving, not sending.
Well, receiving, not sending, but yeah, we don't want to go Andromeda strain on them. I'm fitting in as many as I can. I'm
very
trying.
Nice. Very nice. Maybe we're sucking all the radiation away from their planet. And that's why this star is so cool. Yeah. I mean, but I'm sure there would be a question about how much, like at what point did it become invasive?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, at what point is it an invasion?
And, you know, this one, just simply because of the distance, it's perhaps less of an issue. But if this sparks sort of interest and ideas and we develop better detection methods by studying this, that we're able to then take them and apply those to maybe closer celestial bodies or closer galaxies and that kind of thing, then, you know, potentially at some point in our future, that does become an issue of, you know, are we going to make some kind of prime directive?
Mm, right. And send, you know, and even though it would take even 1,000 years, let's say, to send a communication for it to arrive, you still have to decide now if you're going to do it.
Exactly. I mean, if we received a communication today that was sent, you know, maybe it was sent from someone 10,000 years ago, but it just got it today, loud and clear, ping, hey, you're not alone in the universe, we're here. That would have an impact. It's not quite the same impact as a probe landing, probably, but that would, even if it came from thousands of years ago, it would still fundamentally change, you know, what we think about our place in the world.
Yeah.
Or in the universe.
And depending on the content of the message, you could imagine like a whole, it's hard not to go in the religious direction with stuff like this because it feels so fundamental to many strongly held beliefs. And I'm not just talking religious beliefs, but just strongly held beliefs that you don't even question about your consciousness.
Yeah.
That humans or Earth, let's say, is kind of it. I feel like finding out incontrovertibly that wasn't the case would really potentially shake civilization in a weird way, a highly unpredictable way.
Yeah, I think it would.
especially if the message had useful information in it that we could, you know, it's like, oh, this is a message, you know, whatever. We're humans from the future that traveled back too far into the past and sent you this message to the future. And now you're just receiving it. And, you know, don't forget to put the tube, the top back on the toothpick. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Whatever you do, don't proceed with AI or whatever you do.
It's like we, you know, hey, we notice your planet's heating up. Here's how you fix that.
Right. And then it works.
Yeah.
And like that, imagine that you get a message from like beyond whatever it is, the future, the past.
And as long as it doesn't say, you know, we're turning, blowing up your planet next Thursday to put in a.
Well done. An off ramp.
An off ramp. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, grab your towel, people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the thing about the content of the message would be so intense. Like you can imagine different kinds of messages mm-hmm. where one is revealing some secret, you know, a la, isn't it like Scotty learning how to use dilithium crystals to power the Enterprise or where the, I'm blowing it. There's a theme here.
There's a theme. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Alien tech.
Dear listener, if you can name every sci-fi reference in this episode.
So the content of the message would be so unbelievable. It could just be like, you're not alone. Okay. But then it could be, here's a solution to a major problem that we know you're having. That would be crazy.
Here's how you cure every disease.
Yeah.
Here's how, like, oh, you haven't figured out faster than light travel yet?
Hmm. You guys still have physics, right? Like,
right.
Or the scarier ones for me would be the ones that were like, stop doing this or that.
Stop doing this, yeah.
Because that would be, oh.
Yeah, stop doing this. You're going to destroy yourself. We've seen 6 other civilizations do it already.
Right, right. Because then it would be like, then let the games begin.
Mm, yeah.
That would not go well. Be like, it's like telling the entire population, a population of 100% of smokers that they need to stop smoking.
Yeah.
Good luck. Like you need to stop watching the Kardashians. That literally is going to be the end of the human race as we know it is that show. If you don't stop watching it. Sorry, Kim. Anyway. Okay. I don't know. Did we squeeze this one dry?
You know, I don't know. Maybe, we might be able to take it somewhere else, but I don't know.
Yeah.
How we'd get it on back on track to do that.
Yeah, well, we have, let's put a bookmark in the notion of sending an AI.
Yes.
To investigate for us. To what it would have to be a closer one. So, okay, we discovered mm-hmm. this one for sure. It's definite. Redouble our efforts to find a similar thing closer. Maybe set a range, like only look within this range because that's the range that we could feasibly send a probe. So it makes no sense to look anywhere else.
Right.
Scour the area, scour the yard for the Rolex. And when we find it, we're going to send a robot with a volunteer's artificial intelligence embedded in it. And then we can talk about that. Because there would be a line of volunteers. There would be a line of people who would be like, I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah, there would be.
It is pretty weird.
It is. It's pretty crazy.
Like 7 possible chances for.
Yeah. And it's been celebrated with possibly the best Google Doodle ever.
Oh, I haven't even seen that.
Oh, you haven't seen the Google Doodle?
Uh-uh.
Check it out.
All right. Well, this is going to be Linkorama, folks.
Yes.
So that's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to see Kelly and I in your inbox once a week? Get new episodes delivered straight to you with show notes, tons of links, and oh so much more. Plus, you can reply to any message to suggest topics for future episodes. To get the inside track, go to terrifyingrobotdog.com and look for the Keep Me in the Loop button. That URL again is terrifyingrobotdog.com.